will please come to order. It is April 12, 2011, and we have a couple of bills on the agenda today. And the first one will be Senator Carlson, and he'll be presenting the lands bill.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members.
Good morning. Senator Perry's here.
Okay.
So then we do have a quorum.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Senate File 712. It's the 2011 lands bill. Previously this year, we processed the 2010 holdover lands bill. And so I don't think that this bill has anything that's particularly controversial. It's the same type of a bill as the 2010 bill in that there are some land swaps, there are some land sales by the DNR, and because of the fact that they involve some riparian lands, it's by statute we need to have legislative approval to do that. Usually small parcels of land where some encroachment has been found, and it was deemed easier to sell the land to the landowner than to do other methods. And we do have two amendments to this bill before we get started to get it in the shape that we really need it to be in. The amendments, I believe Senator Ingebrigtsen could help us with that. The first amendment, I don't know the amendment number, but it would strike Section 1 of the bill.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
I would so move that.
Senator,
the amendment is being passed around.
Senator Ingebrigtsen moves the A4 amendment. And indeed, that's all it does is strike Section 1.
Madam Chair and members, Section 1 was the intent of Section 1 originally was to change some language on the valuation of land under $100,000. There was some discussion amongst actually the DNR and Parks and Trail Council and maybe a few other folks that they decided that they wanted to review that language further and maybe bring that up at another time, maybe next year's bill or another time. So for right now, striking Section 1 would just leave current language in law.
Is there any discussion on the amendment? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted.
And Madam Chair, do we want to do this now?
Madam Chair, I have another amendment too.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
I have an amendment, that moves Senate file. This would be the A5 amendment. I think that's being passed out.
Madam Chair and members,
the
A5 amendment was brought to us by the Minnesota Department of Transportation. This involves a very small section of land in a little corridor by Highway 61 and U.S. 94. If anyone here from the DOT, I think what I'll do, probably the best thing to do to explain this is have a representative from the DOT explain the reason for this.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Eric Radin with MnDOT Government Affairs. And we have a project on Interstate 90 down at Dresbach, Minnesota, which is scheduled for a February 2012 letting. And as part of that project, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service would like us to convey approximately 1.4 acres of land to them, which we're willing to do. And we do have a separate bill introduced by Senator Miller, but we thought we might put it here as well.
Is there any discussion on it? Conveyance of land?
Madam Chair, this seemed like a simpler way to do it rather than have a totally separate bill, and the DNR was agreeable to including this in their bill.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on it? Any questions? Okay, all in favor of the A5 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Senator
Okay, with that, Madam Chair and members, what I'd like to do is turn it over to Kathy Lewis, who heads the DNR Lands Division, and walk you through the rest of the bill.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. Kathy Lewis, Lands and Minerals, DNR. The focus probably you would like is on the fiscal impacts of the bill as opposed to going over the details of the bill. Is that correct?
Well, we're not familiar with it at all, so if you want to give us a brief summary on the policy as well as the fiscal.
That'd be great. Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill is addressing sale of DNR-administered lands, and they require legislative authority due to riparian parcels or being direct sales. It also provides for adjustments to boundaries of certain state parks, state recreation areas, state forest. There's a provision, two sections in here address Lost River State Forest and Roseau Lake WMA up in Roseau County, and we are transferring in effect the 160 acres of state-owned land from the state forest to the WMA. In the hearing, in the prior committee hearing, what happened was typical is that there are separate bills brought by senators for sales of tax-forfeited lands in the various counties, and those bills have been incorporated into the engrossment that you see before you today. The basically fiscal impacts, this is a modest bill for fiscal impacts. The primary fiscal impact would concern the Adopt WMA program and the land sales. The Adopt WMA program is a bill that was incorporated into the bill at the last hearing, and it basically is looking at a more modest program, and there are some projected costs to the DNR for signages and some of the volunteer provisions, and the staffing by the DNR for the volunteer program would be absorbed by the DNR. The land sales in most cases are to local units of government for basically a dollar. There are a few parcels that would be sold at public sale. We don't have appraisals on those yet, but the overall revenue is in the $14,000-$15,000 range overall. We don't have the revenue potential from the tax forfeited land sales. That's the responsibility of the county auditors. And some of the counties did bring forth some fairly substantial list of tax forfeited parcels. So there would be revenue to the local taxing districts upon the sale of the tax forfeited lands. I would stand for further questions, Madam Chair.
Are there questions from members? Senator Ingebertson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Lewis, on section, I believe it's I think you have it, Watonwan County, whatever section that is. There's a significant land sale there of 99.75 acres. Can you tell me any idea what kind of dollars we're talking about there? Has it been sold already? I think it's been sold to a local unit of government. It would be the county, is that correct?
Ms. Lewis?
Madam Chair, Senator Ingebertson. The Watonwan County parcel is currently a wildlife management area parcel. It's a strip of land. It's a former railroad property. The proposal is to convey it to the county for a regional trail. The process of in discussions with this property, it has federal aid attached. And so we're in the current process of having discussions with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on the restrictions on the sale. But what we are looking at for restricting the sale is reserving an easement for public hunting, prairie management, and seed harvest. And those types of restrictions are going to greatly reduce the use of the property. And so the appraisal's in process, but we expect with the restrictions on the piece of property that the value will be minimal, and the DNR actually will be retaining some use of the property through the prairie management activities and through the seed harvesting and allowing the public hunting activities. And so it's a modified conveyance in effect.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, I have a question for you. Where does this modest amount of money get tracked in the budget bills?
I believe it's being tracked it's just being absorbed into the DNR budget. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, if it's the sale of the University Trust land parcel, which is one in Cass County, That would go to the corpus of the Permanent University Fund, and the Permanent University Fund is invested by the University of Minnesota and used to support the university. The parcels in Douglas County and Otter Tail County and Wanwan County, they would actually end up in the land acquisition account of the DNR, and they'd be used to buy other game and fish lands for DNR for the outdoor recreation system.
Okay, but the fiscal note shows, $20,000 for the next biennium and a couple, $4,000 or something for this biennium. And is it going to be in the environment bill that they're going to track this?
Senator Higgins, I believe that they're showing that the DNR will absorb the costs for the WMAs. I don't know if someone from DNR wants to address that issue or their fiscal analysts, maybe.
I mean, it's just a little bit of money, but enough of it adds up. We've got
your dollar there.
There you go.
Madam Chair, my name is Dennis Simon. I'm the Wildlife Management Section Chief for the DNR Division of Fish and Wildlife. Madam Chair, members, the Adopt a Wildlife Management Program, as we envision it here, is really downscaled a little bit from our first thoughts. We'll be looking at it more as a pilot project, and we would absorb the cost of developing the project into the DNR's budget. The relatively minor costs that we would incur in outright expenditures would be for signage to recognize the organizations and personal protective equipment for the volunteers, and maybe some miscellaneous small costs to facilitate the habitat work that they're going to be doing on the wildlife management areas. And Madam Chair, I'm not a fiscal analyst, and quite frankly, I can't tell you where the $10,000 that would not be absorbed is in the state budgets.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Higgins,
then I think it needs to go and be a part of Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill. So.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, are you prepared to deal
take
with it?
I'll take it.
There you go.
Thank you, Senator.
It doesn't have a whole lot of zeros behind it, so it's it's not as bad as some of them.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, for those that don't know, Mr. Simon is talking about the Adopt the WA program was a bill that we'd brought forward in our committee, and there was a fiscal note to it at that time, and I appreciate you working a little harder on that and coming up with a little better resolve. And I think Senator Higgins even questioned it at that meeting how much it was costing, and it's intended to be a volunteer program, so we're looking at trying to help the DNR out with managing some of their at least minorly managing some of their WMAs here in the state. So, thanks.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair and Senator Carlson, I wish that you and I had perhaps been able to put together some kind of an amendment prior to this that might have addressed one of the situations we've been working on. I don't think we're at that point, but I'd like to raise it for the committee's consideration, and perhaps it's something Senator Ingebrigtsen could deal with down the road. But several of us have been aware of a situation where there's a homeowner who made an arrangement with, and the homeowner is my constituent, which is how it came to my attention, but made an arrangement with Parks and Trails for Parks and Trails to purchase land on behalf of the DNR in a state park area that the DNR had identified as land that they wanted to have. And it was done on a contract for deed based on the appraisal at that time. As property values plummeted, these people have now been left with a situation where Parks and Trails stopped paying because they were concerned that DNR would no longer be able to pay the price they had committed to based on our laws being about appraised value and you can only go 10% below. And so they, in fact, left my constituents in a pretty tough situation because now they've got a contract for deed that's been defaulted on and they don't have any legal recourse. So as I thought about that situation, and then also we talked about with regard to the sale of the nurseries, that here we have a situation where we identified we'd like to sell these nurseries, but the DNR does not have the capability to sell them for less than appraised value as well. up to a certain percentage. So isn't there perhaps something that we might consider where we don't in statute tie the hands of the DNR either way, whether it be buying above appraised value or below? Isn't that something that by us putting in statute that we are in fact not allowing those who are professionals to do their job one way or another? And so I'm wondering if one way to deal with the situation, Senator Carlson, without adding a fiscal cost is to, and perhaps, you know, if people are agreeable to that or think it's worth pursuing, we could add that amendment on the floor. I don't know. But just putting together something, or if this could be held over, putting together some language that would be permissive as far as giving the DNR ability to negotiate.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Bonoff, for bringing up that issue. I was going to talk to you as soon as we were done here. I did have a chance to speak with Mr. Meyer from the DNR and presented an idea to him that I believe we probably need to develop a little bit. But the idea would be a lot of this problem has really kind of surfaced because of the ability now of the DNR to purchase some land through Lossard Sams and maybe through LCCMR that they didn't have the ability before because of that 3/8 cent sales tax. And so you're right, these pieces of land that are within a state park that are identified when we have a willing seller and the DNR would say, well, that's why we have these park boundaries, so we could pick up these pieces of land. But maybe we need to wait one cycle or maybe even two cycles of the Lossard Sams to be able to have enough money to be able to do that. And yet at the same time, we have landowners willing to sell, but they're willing to sell at point A, not at point B or C. And so my idea was if we could do something in statute that at the time that that land is tied up by the Parks and Trail Council through whether a contract for deed or whatever kind of an arrangement, that would then somehow we need a paper trail from the DNR to Parks and Trail Council, however that works out, so that whether the land price goes up or whether it goes down, that original price is indemnified. And so I think that's the bill that would fix the problem, at least going forward. Now, we still have the problem of the Grahams and their property, and I believe we have an idea how to fix that without having to change this DNR lands, but I think there's a better way to do that, and I would love to talk to you about that. I came up with some ideas, but I think members of the committee, I think if we look at that idea where the DNR is saying, yes, we want to get that, and so they talk to Parks and Trail Council, and voila, we start buying some land and tying up that land. We need to hold the taxpayers harmless if the value goes up, that the DNR is paying the original price, and hold the landowner harmless if the price goes down because they could have sold that property to someone else. In the case of the Grahams, they had an opportunity to sell it to a land developer. They had 17 acres of land on a beautiful peninsula between two rivers. They could have sold it to a developer that was ready, willing, and able to pay the money. They were going to build a nice retirement gated community, and everything would have been wonderful. But the Grahams, in their magnanimous whatever, they wanted to do something nice for the state and say, well, look, if the DNR is willing to pay basically the same price, well, let's let this go into that state park. And so they did that. They did it on a contract for deed without any interest on the contract, and the Parks and Trail Council then defaulted because the value of the land went down, as Senator Bonoff had indicated. So there's a situation where we need to protect both sides of that kind of a transaction, and we're actually working on some legislation that would do that. It would be a revenue-neutral policy thing for the future. But as far as the Grahams, we have another idea for that. So,
Senator Bonoff?
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, that sounds good. I just didn't want to lose this occasion with this body sitting around the table having that discussion, because while it's possible that would help and we'd have to do something in order to have it help looking back, but it wouldn't really address Senator Perry's issue or Senator Ingebrigtsen's, I'm sorry, with regard to the nursery. So I think there is a broader issue about having laws that are so prescriptive with regard to our ability to do business.
Thank you. Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And And Senator Carlson, I echo what Senator Bonhoff is talking about, because I brought up how, you know, when we're talking about selling or buying, how aggressive are we, and are we really motivated sellers, or are we not? And I just have a couple of questions here. When I'm looking at page one, that concerns me a little bit.
We deleted that section. That
oh. Then I don't have any questions. Okay, that's what I thought. All
right. Wasn't paying attention.
Any other questions? Senator Higgins, to your issue, once we establish a Senate position on this, Senator Ingebrigtsen can actually bring this into an amendment in conference committee for the financial part of it that he's dealing with, that little amount. So,
Madam Chair, I think he could just track it there. He probably wouldn't even have to take the language in. Just
do that.
But, you know, people who know more about that than I do would, you know.
Senator Nino?
Madam Chair, just want to move the bill so we can vote.
Sorry. Senator Bonner?
Madam Chair, I know you've just moved it, but just a question, a follow-up question, because I was wondering, Senator Ingebrigtsen, will there be a vehicle if Senator Carlson does draft some language that would address this problem? Do you foresee having a vehicle for it to be included in?
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yeah, I'm not sure. If it can be actually put in through the process in this bill, is that something, Senator Carlson? I guess, Madam Chair, I'm not sure how much work he's done on this.
Senator Carlson,
thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Ingebrigtsen and Senator Bonhoff. The intent was not to include it in this bill, but to wait for the Parks and Trail bill coming up that we were planning on.
That
doing an amendment there.
There might be an avenue. Sure.
Thank you.
In the legacy bill? Excuse me.
Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, you were thinking of putting this in the legacy bill? The Parks and Trails part of the legacy bill?
Offering
Senator
an amendment.
Carlson.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, offering an amendment so that at least the Grahams could have their day in front of the committee and allow the committee to make a decision.
Paying for it with legacy
Senator
funds?
Higgins.
That's a.
Senator Carlson?
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins. That would be the intent.
Well, that's another bill, so back to this one. is there any more discussion on Senate File 712? If not, Senator Nino has a motion on the floor that Senate File 712 be recommended to pass and be sent to the floor. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be sent to the floor. And Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Carlson.
Senator Roebling, we have Senate File 930 before us. Senator Roebling, would you like to explain this to us?
Thank you. Members, this is the deficiency bill, it's commonly referred to as, and there usually is a recommendation from the governor on which departments need some additional funding for various programs that were short when they had to do some extra duties or they found some areas where they just were in need of, like, a match for the federal disaster aid, which is one of the bigger items on here. And I'll just run through this quickly as you're getting the tracking sheet. The Department of Public Safety needed a larger match for the FEMA match. When we did have the special session last fall, it was a little short, so we need $2,043,000 yet for that. And then the Board of Judicial Standards has had additional investigation costs for some cases that have sort of blown their budget. And so they have come and asked for a deficiency payment of $290,000. And the tax court has a special need, and I think Judge Perez is here to address that, but their rent was raised, and they're fearful that they will run out of money and have to close down in December to make up for the costs if we don't give them a deficiency payment to help cover their rent costs. And then the Secretary of State has a special issue that we'll probably have Beth Frazier come up and address. But they have two things. They had legal fees for a media lawsuit, which it was a joint lawsuit against several states, and we lost. And so there were some costs associated with that because we had to pay attorney fees in particular. And so that is the $149,000 on here. And I know there's a discussion about some other reimbursements for the recount that were not included in the governor's budget, but there are ongoing discussions about that. Then one other big area that we're thinking we should take off the books, and it's been recommended to remove it from the books, is $2.135 million. I think it was about in 2005, the legislature passed a bill asking for savings for money to be found by selling some state land. And efforts have been made to do that ever since that time. And there's still slightly over $2 million that hasn't been achieved in those sales. And so we're thinking it's maybe time to take it off the books. That's the recommendation. And so that's what that is reflecting. And so I think maybe we'll ask Mr. Perez to come up and talk briefly about the tax court situation so you can understand that a little better. I know he's here.
Mr. Perez, welcome to the committee. I'm over here. Please state your name for the record.
George Perez, Chief Judge, Minnesota Tax Court. We certainly represent the smallest amount here, so it's certainly the most modest request. And I think Senator Roebling articulately discussed all the others, and certainly with respect to tax court, it was a situation of during the biennium session last time around, in the middle of it, the rent was raised. It was too late to go back and ask for the appropriate funding for that. And so we were really caught in the middle of the process. And again, Senator Roebling has correctly stated that due to that raising of the rent, it led to a deficiency, which is a one-time. I hope it's a one-time. I do understand that looking at the next biennium going forward, that the rents are beginning to decline, and there's numerous reasons for that, so we don't anticipate that certainly in the next biennium and hopefully in future ones. So it is a one-time appropriation to keep the tax court operating and functioning as it's currently doing so. So that's really it in a nutshell.
Thank you, Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Judge Perez, how much of a cut to the next biennium budget does the tax court get? Will you have to come back again for future consideration?
Mr. Perez?
Ms. Higgins? Senator?
Senator Higgins.
Senator Higgins. Mr. Acting Chair. We're hoping, we've asked for appropriate funding for this biennium, and again, there's no indication of any rent increase, and so if we receive what we have requested in the current biennium, we should be solvent and there shouldn't be a deficiency.
Mr. Chair,
Senator
Judge Perez, nobody's getting what they asked for. Okay. And I don't see Senator Limmer. Is he a part of this committee? I don't even know. I'm afraid.
Senator Limmer is not on this committee. Of all the budgets, judiciary was treated
very kindly.
Yes.
Are you a taxes or judiciary? Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, in the Senate budget bills that passed the Senate, the tax court has a $35,000 per year increase in their budget. So it would be essentially carrying forward the impacts of this deficiency appropriation into their 12 and 13 budget.
That's outstanding.
Well put.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
And the tax court raises revenue, so we really don't want them to shut down at all. And so this is a small payment for greater gain.
Senator Langseth.
Mr. Chair, there was a situation. This pertains to that flood control deficiency. We came up with flood control for Browns Valley, Minnesota, $5.9 million, and it had to be cash because the diversion was on the South Dakota side of the river. There was a flood in 2009, and there was some damage to that diversion. The federal government was reluctant to come up with the money because the disaster was on the Minnesota side, and the problem was on the South Dakota side, and I think it was Senator Klobuchar's aide talked to me about it. It was 200 and some thousand. I wonder if somebody in the department or something knows whether that's part of this 2 million or what the status is with that. Is it, there's 200 and some thousand there that wasn't being taken care of.
Well, while they're coming up, while we have Mr. Perez at the table, are we, Senator Newman, you have a question for Mr. Perez?
Yes, I do. Judge Perez, this is an issue that was mentioned in the Judiciary Committee, but I really don't remember any details of it coming forward. Can you tell us, you know, who is the landlord that raised the rent? Who agreed to the raise in the rent when it wasn't in the budget? Is this not something that the tax court could have seen coming and not agreed to? Because it seems to me that we've got an increase in your budget that you didn't have authority for at the time that it was agreed to. So if you could address that, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Perez.
Senator Newman, Mr. Chair, I'm not fully aware of what the thinking process was. The landlord is the state of Minnesota.
Department of Administration.
Department of Administration.
Just makes so much sense.
And there was some, what we were told was that there was a reconfiguration of the square footage, and there was going to be common areas added, and that included, that's one of the reasons for the increase, that we didn't gain any square footage, but we suddenly inherited that the common uses, that the hallways and the bathrooms and stairways were all going to be, that this is consistent with the way other offices are charged and leased, so that they were going to be in conformity with that policy. And that was the reason that we were given.
Mr. Chair, with that explanation, that being the state of Minnesota as your landlord, there really isn't a whole lot you could have done about it, so I appreciate the explanation.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Senator. Mr. Chairman, I think the tax court ought to raise their taxes.
Thank you, Senator Megan.
Raise the state's
tax.
Senator Perry.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. I would think if in fact, shouldn't there be a reduction someplace? If in fact that the Department of Admin readjusted, here's where I'm going, and I don't know, maybe I'm cynical, I don't know. But I'm thinking,
yes,
what
are.
A great way to get some more money. Just readjust the rent,
right.
And we have to come up with more money. So if, in fact, the judge's statement is true, the Department of Admin should be able to show us the deduction to some other department of $38,000. But would that be?
Senator Perry, theoretically, if we are giving more money to the tax court to pay more money to the state, we should have more money to give back to the taxpayers. I agree with you.
Well, I'm just suggesting that maybe we check with the Department of Administration, because if they're they're having the tax court assume more expense area. They've got to take it away from somebody else. Otherwise, we've just given more money away.
Any other questions?
On this subject?
Yes.
Tax court?
Yes. No. Okay. I just want to, I don't want to make the fine gentleman here sit at the table any longer than he has to. So thank you, sir. Looks like
Senator
Roebling. Yes.
That's a very good question that I don't know where that money is going. And I don't know that someone else got a reduction. Maybe they never had been levying any rent for those common areas would be my suspicion, but I don't know how they got by this long without it. And unless it's to pay the utilities or some major repair project or something, I'm going to find out where that went.
Thank you. So now we're back to Senator Langseth's question, and maybe you can refresh our memory, Senator.
Mr. Chair, this has to do with the Browns Valley cleanup or fix-up problem in the after the 2009 flood, and it was that border problem. And do you happen to know what's going on with that?
And I apologize, I didn't write your name down. Could you state your name for the record?
My name is Chris Eide. I'm the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. And Mr. Chair, Senator Langseth, that $200-some-odd thousand would 25% of that is not in this bill. And the reason it's not in this bill is because FEMA did not approve that project because South Dakota did not have a disaster declaration.
So I understand
the damage
that.
The damage was in South Dakota, even though it was a project that was funded for a community in Minnesota. So that is under appeal. So FEMA has the final approval authority for that project. And if it is deemed that that is a project that is based on the Minnesota Declaration, even though the property is in the state of South Dakota, who is not planning on making any of the match, then we will have to deal with that in another deficiency bill.
Okay, thank you.
Members, are there any other questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did I hear you correctly and see correctly that on your deficiency bill tracking that reducing the value of land sales from previous session laws, I think that's what I tried to eradicate last session, so we wouldn't be just kicking the ball down the road, but that's what happened. So you are finally disposing of that three or four biennial carry forward of inability to sell land to solve a budget problem, and I thank you for it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
That is what we are attempting to do. It was recommended by the governor through the DNR,
good.
And it has been a bad time to sell land. Hopefully the market's going to be picking up, and, you know, it's possible we could leave it in here and it could happen next month, but it's really hard to predict, and we have been kicking it down the road.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, if it does happen, I mean, these land sales go on all the time, it will show up in our balance sheet, but we don't have to carry it on the forecast like we're going to get it, and then we don't, and then it adds to the deficit, and we've played that game through so many forecasts. At least it cleans it out of there. When it's sold, it will become part of the revenue stream.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could get Ms. Eide up again one more time, I'm sorry. Just a question on the appeal process. Can you take me through that or take the committee through that appeal process with FEMA? And just how long will that take?
Ms. Eide.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, the appeal process, it can take a while. When we have a disaster and then we determine the damage, then the state of Minnesota and FEMA goes and meets with the community and develops a project worksheet. That project worksheet will then include the eligible portions of a project. If a local community does not agree with that, then they can appeal. They have to appeal in a certain amount of time. I believe it's 90 days to appeal the decision by FEMA, and then it could take until the end of that project, which sometimes could be a couple of years down the road until that is completed.
Thank you.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Ide, and members, I just ask that you be a little patient with me because I've never seen a deficiency budget appropriations before. And it concerns me that it feels to me like we are spending money from the next biennium to pay for things from the last biennium, and that makes me uncomfortable. In terms of the FEMA disaster assistance, that's $2 million in this bill. And it says it's a one-time appropriation and that the appropriation is available until expended. What is this money for? Has it already been spent? What does it mean where it says that the money is going to be available until expended?
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, public assistance is a very long process. The way that we determine the damage assessment is a very short-term preliminary damage assessment, and from that we determine the 75% federal share and the 25% state share. So when the 25% non-federal share. So when the 2009 flood happened, within a week we were out assessing the damage so that we could get some of this money into the local hands as soon as possible. So at that point, we get what we think is a pretty good guess at the time. Then, as I said earlier, the state and FEMA works with the applicant, the local unit of government, on developing a project worksheet. Most of this money are for road damage, damage to culverts, damage to public infrastructure. It could be rural electric co-ops, those kinds of things. So when we start doing the actual unearthing of the damage, more often than not, we find that there is additional damage that was not originally assessed at the very beginning. So then as these projects go to fruition, they end up being cost overruns from what we originally had come back to the legislature for. We do not have a disaster fund in the state of Minnesota. The legislature had determined quite a few years ago that they would rather fund disasters at the time in a special session and then do it in deficiency bills. And so you will have a deficiency bill every year from the Department of Public Safety to handle past disasters. We have 225 projects from the 2009 flood that have not been paid their state share. Most of those are townships that really cannot afford to carry that that cost for this amount of time. But those projects do, it's a reimbursement process. So that's why it takes such a long time, because they don't get the state share until the projects are completed. And then we give them the state share. So we're always paying in arrears.
Senator Newman.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Ide, so this $2 million represents cost overruns? Is that correct?
Not necessarily cost overruns, but damage that we did not assess at the very beginning, within the first week or two after the flood. Because when we're out there assessing damage, and we get pressure from the local units of government to make sure that we can start repairing the damage right away. They want to have a presidential declaration. So we get out there, and we are sometimes assessing damage when property is underwater. So we don't know what that damage is, but our engineers take a pretty darn good guess at what they think it is. Then when they start doing these projects, the projects are bigger. So when I say cost overruns, I was actually wrong. It's the projects are bigger than we had originally intended that those projects would be.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Ide, I remember you appearing in public safety and talking about FEMA. I apologize, but I do not remember you describing this particular appropriation. I may have dozed off, but I just don't remember it. But at what point, Ms. Ide, do we see what this $2 million is being spent on? All I am seeing is a $2 million appropriation for matching funds to FEMA, but I don't have any idea what this is being spent on other than damage that has occurred as a result of floods. And I'm simply not comfortable with agreeing to appropriating $2 million. I don't know what it's being spent on.
Ms. Ide?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, you would have to be able to see the project worksheets and the spreadsheets of all the projects for the applicants from every disaster. We have that information. We don't routinely bring that to a hearing. We can certainly provide it if requested, but we usually, there are thousands of applicants, thousands of projects, and each of those projects has a project worksheet and how many feet of culvert and how many feet of riprap and how many yards of fill. And we've just never routinely shared that. The federal government pays the first 75%, and then the state, in this instance, paid the final 25%.
Last comment on this, Mr. Senator Chairman, and I appreciate your indulgence. Just because it's difficult to itemize what we're spending the money on, just because it's FEMA that is coming forward with these projects, I don't think that we just necessarily rubber stamp $2 million in expenses without knowing what we're spending the money on. And that is what I see here, is an appropriation where, you know, I don't know if they spent it on sandbags or coffee for workers or culverts. There's absolutely nothing here to tell us what we're spending this money on. And on that basis alone, I will maybe folks here at the table with more experience than I in terms of these deficiency appropriations can figure out, maybe we lay this thing on the table and get some more information. Maybe we send it back to public safety. But I'm not comfortable with this.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langseth.
Well, Mr. Chair, you may not feel uncomfortable about it, but this is something we do routinely. I'm just going to tell you a little story about what happened because of some of the damage in the 2009 flood. My granddaughter was in a vehicle. They hit a washout. She broke her jaw, and she had her jaw wired shut for a couple of months. I mean, this is the type of thing we have to deal with when it comes to these floods. This is very routine. This year, I expect, if there's a disaster declaration, we're going to come with a bill before the end of session. But it will be done so quickly that it's going to have to be almost more of an estimate. So this is very routine, and I am sure if you ask the department about the details, they'll give it to you. But this is not something out of the ordinary at all. And, up in our area this year, the crest at Fargo-Moorhead was 2 feet below the 2009 flood. But there are areas in the rural areas that have got higher water than they've ever had before. So there's going to be a lot of roads washed out and culverts and all this type of thing. But I have people back in my area say, we haven't got our FEMA money yet from 2 years ago. Well, that's what this is dealing with. And for $2 million, there will be $6 million of federal money. And the faster we can get this out there, the better. They've already waited 2 years. And we got another disaster to deal with.
Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Nino, I think, Senator Newman, hello. I think Senator Langseth is right, and we have done this for a long time. At a certain point, I think we have to trust the professionals who are working with this. Ms. Idy is well-known nationally as a leader in Homeland Security emergency management. She wouldn't take us down the garden path. And I think it's like Senator Langseth said, you know, when all you're looking at is water and you're trying to assess what's happened underneath, you may look at one culvert and say, oh, yeah, we're going to have to replace that one, and look at another one and say, no, that one will be fine. But when the water drains out, you realize they both need to be replaced, but you've only put in for repair for one. So I think this is something that we have to do. I think our citizens deserve to be done with the last flood and the damage that it caused before we go on to repairing for the next one. I've had a bill for several years. I didn't introduce it this year that they would actually set up a fund so that we'd have the money so they wouldn't have to come back for deficiencies. But, you know, like every other fund, special revenue fund, you know, it gets drained because we're having budget problems. And so sometime when our finances are a little more stable, that would be a good thing for us to establish.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can bring a little experience to this in that I was an emergency management director myself, and knowing just how things really do come from the federal government. I think the explanation was good. I mean, we won't know until, and that's what happens here, we won't know until things have finally dried up exactly what it is. When you get your first proposal on the table, it might be way off. It might be not anywhere close. But our budgeting process moves along. We go ahead and we budget what the first bill was. When we find out later that it cost, we had to replace that culvert that we didn't think we had to replace here and there, that's where this comes from. And it certainly, it has been done all the time. I mean, that's what you do with floods. You just don't know the damage until everything dries up and you get a final tally, and that might be past our budget cycle. That's what this is addressing, so. The one question I was going to ask, and I don't know this, is they always come to the state of Minnesota to cover the township costs. They kind of bypass the county there. Has it ever been thought about that the county would actually hold those dollars or pay for those particular overruns, and we would invest and give them back to the county? It seems like we kind of skip one spot there. Does that make any sense?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, the state is actually the grantee, and then we have to subgrant that money. The counties don't have the authority to subgrant disaster funding, so that's why we deal directly with each applicant, and a township is a separate applicant.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, you know, we've had some occasions to be together here with the last flooding. I think the message is clear. Yes, we've done this over and over again. By golly, we just rubber stamp. But when one of us asks a question, let us not be so defensive here. One person asked the question, what is the money being spent for? So I think on your part, it would be beneficial just to be able to articulate and show you know, some of us have been here, but when somebody new comes in and hasn't had an occasion, they're going to ask the question. And I hear people kind of getting a little defensive because this is the way we always do it. Well, we're going to continue to do it, but let's try to answer the question some way to put a person at ease rather than to just say, well, this is the way we've always done it. That's why we're in the position we're in today, I'm afraid. So when a question's asked, maybe Ms. Edy, you can have some documentation just to say, here are the things that this money is anticipated to be being used for. Here are some of the requests so that we can kind of solve and answer those questions. Just moving forward.
Mr. Chair, Senator Perry, I will do that. I can tell you, Senator Newman, that that the there are seven different categories of public assistance, pre-management, emergency response costs. That's where your rental of generators and sandbags and those kinds of things come in. Roads, bridges, utilities, parkland, government-owned facilities. Those are all the different categories of assistance, and they all come with the 75-25 split.
Senator Berglund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Ide, are any of the infrastructure needs because of flooding that this appropriation would address anticipated to need to be repaired again because of this year's flooding?
Ms. Ide.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, I would make some assumptions that, yes, some of the same roads get washed out over and over and over again. Some of our communities have the same emergency response needs, and that's a large part of it too. Is the costs of buying sandbags, the costs of renting generators, the costs of pumping out water. Some of those costs will always be there. The FEMA has now introduced a new section of mitigation into their public assistance. So if it's found when they unearth a culvert and they had a 12-inch culvert that could not accommodate that flood water, they can put in a 16-inch culvert. So those are some of the mitigation factors that are being put into the public assistance, which is also making public assistance a little bit more expensive because improvements are more expensive than just fixing the old things. So they have taken care of that over the last few years. But because of the way, in particular, the Red River Valley is, we will have the same roads washed out over and over and over again.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Ide, I am not so worried about the cost of sandbags and generators and things like that, but the roads, bridges, and culverts, were they repaired already and we need this money to finish paying for it, or are we talking about thinking we would have appropriations for this flood that would be repairing roads that we already had anticipated repairing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, this deficiency bill is actually covering costs that have already been incurred.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chairman, I just had one comment to make, and that is that we are not spending next year's money because we actually have money on the bottom line this biennium. So this would be money that would be coming out of the bottom line this biennium, and I know everybody is uncomfortable because that means that money isn't available next biennium to help solve the deficit, but we do need to remember that the money we have on the bottom line this year was intended to serve the problems that we have this year, and that's what the bill does.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langsam.
Mr. Chair, I just want to address the thing about the same roads getting washed out over and over again. Besides protecting cities, and we're getting pretty close to done there, we've been doing impoundments, water management, and we'll probably be shifting more to that in the future. Senator Ingebrigtsen and Senator Sinchin were up there over the weekend, and they stopped at what was called the North Ottawa Project. It takes in 75 square miles of water and holds it until it can be released so it doesn't affect the crest. There's another one ways away from there. They're buying up the land and so on. It's going to take in another 75 square miles of water. And then there's a lot of smaller ones. The one is just a couple miles from my place. It holds back 6.5 square miles of water. So this is being done all over the Red River Basin, and the goal is that every watershed, and there are, I don't know, 18 watersheds or something like that in the Red River Basin, each one has the goal of dropping the water flow by 20%. And when, as we move towards that, there will be less and less of this situation where roads and culverts are washed out year after year.
Senator Bonoff, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I have been impressed with watching the work that's being done this time around, and it does seem as though we're getting a handle on it, so I appreciate that. And to Senator Newman's point, I think some of us who haven't been on this committee before just are curious. And so I do think it's helpful, and I think the point was made in also in the future, just so we can see, so we have a full understanding of what, in fact, we're paying for with our state dollars, and certainly know of your reputation and your work. And so it isn't meant to be in any way, in that way. But if we're ready to move on, can I ask a question about the Secretary of State, or is any other questions about this?
I think we Senator Perry.
No, before I have an amendment before
okay.
Senator Bonoff, possible.
Okay, Senator Perry.
Well, unless there's more questions for Ms. Eby.
I didn't see anyone other than you raising their hand. So.
Well, I'd like to offer the, I think it's A11-0303 amendment.
Senator Perry offers the A11-0303 amendment. That's being handed out. Senator Perry, do you want to address that?
Well, it's I know I was here about helping the Secretary of State get reimbursed to reimburse the counties, but I think with this one I'm going to ask if Ms. Fraser would I can stumble through it, but she can articulate it a lot faster than I could. So,
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Beth Fraser with the Office of the Secretary of State. And Senator Perry's amendment would pay for costs incurred both by our office and the counties to conduct the 2010 recounts. We, before every general election and primary election, ask the counties whether they will partner with us to conduct the recount. And both in 2008 and in 2010, we asked the counties whether they would do it, and we agreed to pay them 3 cents a ballot. We knew that that would not fully cover their costs, but it was a show of good faith, I guess, to partially cover their costs. And in 2010, we also agreed that if they agreed to do it, we would ask the legislature to fully fund their expenses. We have looked at, there are basically two different ways to run a statewide recount. Either you can partner with the counties and have them recount their own ballots, or you can bring all of the ballots to a central location and count them all together. And doing the central method costs at least three times as much. And so we believe it's economical and a better use of resources and better for the residents of the state to be able to go see their own ballots counted, you know, get to see the recount around the state. What we've heard from a few of the counties since the 2010 recount is if they're not reimbursed, they're not sure that they're going to be able to agree next time. They're, you know, all of their budgets are tight and their county boards aren't sure they necessarily want to cover the costs if there were to be yet another statewide recount. So since counting the ballot centrally would actually be significantly more money, we believe this is a good way to keep the counties agreeing to partner with us and to, if there were to be another recount, to do it in the most economical way possible.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, if there is a statutorily covered recount, can they back out of that? Can they not participate in a recount?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, the duty to do the recount is on the state. And so we have asked the counties to partner with us. They would be required, if they didn't partner with us, to bring us the ballot. So there would still be some costs on their part. But they're not actually required to oversee the recounting of their own ballots, of other costs that they incur in addition to staffing that are making copies, multiple copies of challenged ballots, potentially overtime. And so they're not statutorily required to incur those costs.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this was heard in Senator Perry's committee. And I did not have it in this deficiency bill because it was not recommended by the governor, and this basically reflects those recommendations. I am thinking I'd leave it to the committee. I had decided not to offer it because the 3 cents was what was expected, and then there was a survey done of the counties to see what additional costs they had incurred, and they came up with a much higher number. And, you know, they've already closed their fiscal years for 2010, and I thought they've dealt with it. It mainly involves staff time. I don't know that it was a lot of direct out-of-pocket expenses, but Ms. Fraser is concerned about their reaction for future recounts if they don't get some more reimbursement. I know the Secretary of State's office did pay out the $65,000, and that came out of their budget. And they had done some shifting around with some licensing for computer software that were maybe delayed because they had to come up with the $65,000. So that, you know, the question was, should we reimburse the Secretary of State's office the $65,000? And then in addition, should we give the counties the additional money that they said it cost them? And that's really the question before the committee today with this amendment.
So does this amendment to $322,000 that is on top of the 65, so the actual total cost would have been $387,000? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that this is the total with the $65,000 in it.
Okay, so the Secretary of State would be getting their $65,000 back out of the 322.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Regarding the Secretary of State's, both this amendment and what's in the original bill, I don't remember seeing any of this in the Judiciary Committee. The questions raised by Senator Engelbretson, the explanation by Senator Roebling, to my way of thinking, are really questions that should have been addressed in the Judiciary Committee because it goes to the question of the statutes and the laws that apply, for instance, to the recount. So here again, I am questioning why this is being brought up at this time in a deficiency budget.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
It was in Senator Perry's State Government Innovations and Veterans Committee, not Judiciary.
I understand that.
Are there any other questions? Senator Bonner?
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, to that point, if it wasn't referred to Judiciary, it was because it wasn't meant to be overseen by the Judiciary Committee. So I wouldn't want it left with that there was some mistake in that. I think that it seems appropriate to me that it would have gone to Senator Perry's committee because it's with regard to our state government rather than Judiciary.
Well, members, Mr. Bodern has a recommendation or suggestion.
Mr. Chairman, just a suggestion to Senator Perry, if he can incorporate an instruction to staff in his motion. This amendment was prepared by the revisor's office, and substantively it works fine. I just think it would work better if the language were shown in the existing rider that's already in the bill for the Secretary of State's office. So if we have an instruction to do that, we'll just move the substance of what's in this amendment into that section, into Section 5, as you see it in the bill on page 2.
That would work. Okay. So Senator Perry moves this language as recommended by Mr. Bonner to be incorporated into the existing rider. Senator Bonner?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Fraser, what are the counties expecting? Are they actually expecting that this is happening? Do they know about it? Are they waiting for this money? Or, as Senator Roebling said, did they actually close their books and thought this money isn't coming?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, the counties are aware that this bill is moving through the process, and I believe are hopeful that they will be reimbursed for the cost that they incurred. I believe that counties are on their fiscal year matches the calendar year. So I believe they have closed their books for that fiscal year. But again, we're concerned that going forward, if in 2012 we ask them, will you agree to help us if there's a recount, and they all say no, the state's going to incur substantially higher costs.
Senator, I can tell you I received an email from one of my counties late last night that I think I forwarded to Senator Roebling, but between 11 p.m. last night and 8 o'clock this morning, I doubt it got a chance to be reviewed. And they were aware of it and just highlighted the fact that it wasn't in this bill and why not, and clearly it's cheaper for us to coordinate with the counties and to do it ourselves, and what's going to happen there, basically was that email. And it's not one of the bigger counties in the state, although it's not one of the smallest either, pretty average. Any other questions, members? Comments, Senator Roebling?
I think in 2008, when we had the big recount with the Frank and Coleman race, I believe they were given the 3 cents then, and I don't think there was anything over and above that, and I don't know if the Secretary of State's office got an extra payment in a deficiency or not. Do you remember, Ms. Frazier?
Ms. Frazier?
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, in 2008, we paid the counties 2 cents a ballot for the primary recount, because there was also a statewide recount in the primary for an associate Supreme Court seat. And then we paid them 3 cents a ballot for the U.S. Senate recount. And there was not a deficiency appropriation for our office or the counties at that point. Mr. Chair, if I may add, we also at that point believed that statewide recounts were kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing that happened every, you know, several decades, and did not expect to have another one so soon.
Back to back. All right. If there's no further discussion, members, Senator Perry has moved the A11-0303 in the fashion recommended by Mr. Bodern. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed?
No.
Motion.
That's okay.
Motion carries you.
I said I would take the recommendation from the committee, and that's fine.
Are there any other questions or discussion, members? Senator Bonoff.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Ms. Frazier, could you please tell us about the lawsuit?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, yes, the lawsuit occurred in 2008, and it's regarding a statute that over the years has changed back and forth. But basically, for many years, there's been a quiet zone around a polling place, saying that voters who are within a certain distance of the polling place are entitled to be free both of campaigning but also of anyone else that basically. And so there's a prohibition both on campaigning but also on anyone other than voters or election judges or someone assisting voters from being in this safe space, basically this quiet zone. And in 2008, the all of the major media companies, ABC and Fox and NBC and the AP, sued Minnesota as well as several other states, saying that they wanted their exit pollsters to be able to be as close to the door to the room where the polling was taking place as possible. And the law prohibited that, and so they sued us to change the law so that their exit pollsters could be have as much access to voters as possible. They won the lawsuit, as Senator Roebling said. And the law was changed by the legislature in 2010 to provide an exemption for exit pollsters going forward so that they are allowed within that quiet zone. So the lawsuit is over at this point. The media companies hired New York attorneys who charged very high rates. And the judge in this case recognized that there are very competent attorneys in Minnesota and reduced the rates to what would have been charged by Minnesota attorneys. So this is a discount to a certain extent, but the attorney's fees were awarded, and the state, our office, and the attorney general's office need to pay the attorneys in the case this amount.
Senator Newman.
Mr. Chairman, is by any chance a copy of that order ordering the state of Minnesota to pay the attorney's fees available?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman, I can get you a copy of it.
Thank you.
Any other discussion, members? Senator Roebling.
If not, I would like to move that Senate File 930 be recommended to pass and be sent to the floor.
As amended.
As amended.
Senator Roebling has moved her bill be recommended to pass as amended. Be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed?
Opposed.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed, sent to the floor. I believe that is the end of our agenda. There